October 19th, and this is KBIA's Views of the News. Our weekly roundtable on media behaviors comes to you from the Futures Lab studio at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Amy Simons, and we have a special treat for our longtime listeners today. The creator of this program, Professor Emeritus Rod Gillette, is here with Mike McKean and me. It's been a few weeks since we've been on the air, so we have a lot to talk about. We'll touch on the debates, what to expect tonight, and what has stood out to us from the last two. We'll talk about the endorsements and the predictions and the impact those seem to be having. And we'll talk about Saturday Night Live and why it is Trump is calling for the end of the long-running sketch comedy show. But we'll start with the tape. Really, that's all I have to say. The tape. And everyone knows what I mean. The 2005 recording of Donald Trump and Billy Bush, in which Donald Trump describes grabbing women and kissing them because he can. Since that tape's release, 10 women have come forward alleging Trump assaulted them. I remember the first push alert that I got about this a week ago Friday, indicating that tapes of Trump making lewd comments had surfaced. And my first thought was, shocker. But I never really expected that it was going to turn into something of this magnitude.
I didn't get a push.
No push.
I would say that I, even though I no longer am really shocked by anything that Mr. Trump says, that one did take me aback that he did this. So like millions of other Americans, as much as I disliked it, I listened to what the man said.
I wasn't surprised, I think, that he said those things as much as I was surprised that a tape existed of it and that it was going to be shared. And, I mean, we talked a little bit about the behind the scenes of that before. But once that came out, it has swamped, you know, the coverage of everything else. It swamped the coverage of WikiLeaks. It swamped the coverage of any other issue that might have come up. In some ways, it's even swamped the debates. And so it's had a huge lasting impact, at least for the past, what, week and a half or however long it's been since it came out.
Well, and this has changed the entire narrative of the election. We aren't talking about foreign policy. We aren't talking about education. We aren't talking about the environment. Issues where these candidates really do have very different positions, very different perspectives. And the closer we're getting to the election, that information isn't getting out.
In my view, this has dominated the discussion for the past week and a half or whatever. But it seems to me that even before that, we had forgotten the issues, at least in terms of the presidential campaign. There really hasn't been, in my view, a substantive discussion of issues. And the last couple of weeks, almost none at all.
Is it too late to start that discussion?
In my view, yes. It's too late to start having a real, honest-to-gosh, substantive discussion of the real issues that affect Americans.
It's kind of depressing to me because we've done so little to talk about the issues that one of the big memes from the second debate was Ken Bone, the guy from St. Louis who, you know, bothered to ask a question about energy policy. And so for about a day, it was about what a hero he was. But then it quickly devolved into all the crazy stuff he'd written on Reddit and it was about his personality and had nothing to do with the issues anymore. So that was like the lone issue that got any attention from the debates. And quickly we spun it off into something else.
So let me ask about one of the ways that this did spin off and if the media had a role in this or if this was Donald Trump entirely, the idea that this somehow turned into a conversation about Bill Clinton's infidelities.
I keep saying to myself, what has Bill Clinton got to do with any of this, really? This is, to me, it's just a non-issue, or it should be a non-issue, in this particular campaign. He's running for first gentleman, perhaps, but certainly not running for president.
I can understand the notion that how Hillary Clinton reacted to Clinton's, you know, infidelities might be relevant if she, in fact, did attack the women who accused him of that. And, you know, the evidence is mixed. And certainly the evidence that Clinton raped somebody is mixed. Is it totally irrelevant? I don't know. But like I'd say, if a normal Republican candidate decided to play that issue against Hillary Clinton, it might have gotten more traction than it is coming from Trump, especially with the tape.
So following the release of that tape, there have now been 10 women who have come forward. They have, in different media outlets and in different forums, outlined what happened to them, made their allegations, and gave an account of their personal experiences. And some of those published in the New York Times. Donald Trump unhappy with how those were put out there, what his opportunities were potentially to respond. And he requested a retraction that the New York Times wasn't ready to give.
Not quite ready, no. Not from the tone of the lawyers, the letter.
So tell us a little bit, for folks who haven't seen or read that letter yet.
Well, it's for a lawyer, it's only one page. Which is kind of surprising. And it was, how should I phrase this? It was nicely phrased and simply made the point that Mr. Trump himself had ruined his own image. Well, the background to that comment. In libel cases, the claim is that you damage my image. My reputation is shot. My image is tarnished. And the lawyer pointed out that Mr. Trump had done a pretty good job of tarnishing his own image prior to all of this, and this hardly did him any further damage.
Right. I mean, I love the quote. Just a little piece of it was, "Nothing in our article has had the slightest effect on the reputation that Mr. Trump, through his own words and actions, has already created for himself," which I think a couple of things about that besides just the really direct language. One, the fact that the New York Times was willing to put it out there, the letter itself, was, you can say that was transparent. Some critics have said, well, that was taking sides. I don't know. I could argue about that either way. But then also, it brought up this whole notion that somehow Trump could win if he were to claim libel or slander against the New York Times. And there is a very tough standard to meet, which ironically comes from a case from the New York Times many years ago, New York Times versus Sullivan, which basically says a news organization, even if they were to print falsehoods, if they didn't do it maliciously, knowing that it was false at the time, they can't really be held liable for it. So his chances of succeeding, were he actually going to file a lawsuit, which I'd be surprised if he does, are very, very remote.
Plus the fact that he's a public figure now, and a public figure has much less protection in our libel laws.
And should have.
Yeah.
I would argue anyway, yeah.
Well, so let's talk for a minute about the other voice that is on that tape. It's not just Donald Trump. There's also Billy Bush. He went from being the guy who, frankly, was the one who hosted the third hour of the Today Show and did goofy celebrity segments, to becoming a household name, a name that NBC didn't want associated with its brand anymore. Here's Matt Lauer at the beginning of yesterday's Today Show.
That NBC News announced last night that Billy Bush would be leaving the Today Show effective immediately, noting that he was a valued colleague and longtime member of the broader NBC family. A statement Billy released separately last night read in part, "I look forward to what lies ahead." And of course, all of us here today wish Billy the very best.
I'm sure that they do. I will tell you, when I saw that air yesterday morning at about, I don't know, 6 or 7 minutes after 7 o'clock, it felt like the most awkward thing I had seen on TV in a long time.
Oh, I think maybe that Matt Lauer was trying very hard to suppress a laugh, and that that the staff didn't have graphics underneath us saying, ha, 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 because Billy Bush, one, was being supposedly groomed as Matt Lauer's replacement eventually on the Today Show, and two, the vast majority of the staff that work behind the scenes at the Today Show are women, and from all reports we've heard, they were pretty much uniformly against Billy Bush coming back in any guise whatsoever. So I'm not sure that they felt terribly bad on the set of the Today Show. It may be in the corporate offices of NBC Universal, they might have been a little bit, you know, this way and that way about it, but not the people that put the show on.
I have a confession to make. I never heard of Billy Bush. I never had seen Billy Bush until this whole episode suddenly exploded. And So I had no regard for the guy. I didn't know anything about him at all. Apparently, he's a distant member of the Bush family.
I was going to say, I will admit to needing to Google to be able to figure out and know for sure that he is a distant cousin of the Bushes. We have talked about Billy Bush a little bit over the course of the last few months on this program after he and Al Roker got into a fight following the Ryan Lochte incident during the Olympics.
Yeah, and you could have said, look, this guy's a loose cannon at that point, and he's certainly not a serious journalist if he's trying to defend Ryan Lochte at the time when almost all the evidence seemed to be against him. I guess the other thing I find about this whole Billy Bush piece that's fascinating is that Anderson Cooper finally got an interview with Melania Trump recently, and she is now blaming Billy Bush for egging on her husband.
So is he collateral damage in all of this, or is he responsible?
I think he bears some responsibility. I read Melania's comments also referring to him as a little boy, and they were just having boy talk. And as you said, Mike, she's kind of blaming him for getting her husband in trouble with this. And I'm thinking, okay, it's kind of a masculine reaction to joke or to laugh a little bit when somebody makes these crude remarks. You don't know right what else to do at that point.
It becomes a very awkward and uncomfortable
situation. It's a very
uncomfortable
moment, and it's kind of excuse yourself by just kind of giggling a little bit, which is what he was. But he also had a few comments to make on that tape too.
You know, the thing for me though is that he was in his 30s when this happened. He had interviewed Trump numerous times on Access Hollywood. He knows the kind of stuff that Trump gets into. And both of them had microphones on. It at least is professional malpractice for you to say stuff like that when you know that microphone could be turned on and somebody could be recording what you're saying.
This was on the bus, is that right?
Right. This was on the bus as they were preparing to go to a soap opera shoot. Billy Bush kind of had a bit of a history of this. I saw, okay, talk about meta, a clip on The View of a clip from John Oliver, where John Oliver's staff had put together a string of highly inappropriate questions he had asked different celebrities over the course of the years, Jennifer Lopez among them. And one of the questions they were asking on The View was whether or not it was taking so long to negotiate his separation, because at this point it had become pretty clear it was going to happen, because he had been given a long enough leash, he'd been given enough leeway to sometimes ask inappropriate or invasive questions, especially of women in Hollywood previously.
I mean, I can see how that might be an example of hindsight is always 20/20, but you know, it seems to me that he kind of got what he had coming. Also, more importantly, I think it's really interesting that this whole tape issue and Billy Bush's involvement in it as well as Trump's has finally caused us to have a serious conversation, at least for a couple of weeks, about the prevalence of women being assaulted in public. I mean, we weren't talking about that issue very seriously until all this came out. Mm-hmm. And I hope that the conversation continues beyond the political context that it's in right now.
The NBC ties here, they really do just keep coming. I mean, it was once home to Trump's reality show, The Tape and Billy Bush, and then there's Saturday Night Live. For more than four decades, it's been the mainstay of political parody. Heck, Tina Fey played Sarah Palin better than Sarah Palin played Sarah Palin. And maybe we're seeing that again this election cycle, too. Did you catch the cold open this week?
Hello, and welcome to the second and worst ever presidential debate. I'm Martha Raddatz.
And I'm Edison Cooper. And before we begin, we just need to do one last thing.
Oh, much better. Now let's get this nightmare started. Please help us welcome the candidates, Republican nominee Donald Trump, and can we say this yet?
Probably fine.
President Hillary Clinton.
Let's just say that Donald's not too happy about that. Sunday morning, he went on one of his Twitter rants and said, and here's the quote, "Watched Saturday Night Live, hit job on me. Time to retire the boring and unfunny show. Alec Baldwin portrayal stinks, media rigging the election." This isn't funny at all, is it? I mean, we're laughing, but it really isn't funny. We're talking about a guy who wants to be president and is wanting to silence parody, is wanting to silence free speech and free expression.
He wants to silence anybody who says anything critical about him. He doesn't want to lose anything. I don't know that he cares so much about winning. He just doesn't want to lose. And anybody who engages in parody, where he is, quote, the victim, is going to feel his wrath.
Interestingly enough, though, he seems a little bit more ruffled by Alec Baldwin's portrayal of him than he has other people, if it was Daryl Hammond or one of the other actors on the show.
There was a think piece that you got on the Link blog that was basically suggesting it's not that it was a parody of Donald Trump, but it was a parody that wasn't about the things he likes to be made fun of. You know, the fact that he's this huge media mogul, this billionaire who'll say anything, but attacking him on things where he's a little bit more vulnerable. What I found really interesting about this whole thing is that it's not all that different in kind, but in degree, because Republican candidates forever and ever have blamed the left-wing media for being biased against them and trying to work against their presidential candidates, you know, in the elections. But I've never seen a candidate not be able to pick their battles. You know, he's tweeting about this at 7 o'clock in the morning, just like he was tweeting about the Miss Universe candidate at a time when his message, even if his message is going to be the media are out to get me and the election is rigged, he's not picking the best
way to say it. 2 in the morning or 7 a.m. on Sunday isn't maybe the time to talk about that?
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's part, and I don't want to say that the issue of sort of delegitimizing the election isn't important. I think it's really dangerous what he's saying there, because if his supporters, if he loses, don't have faith in the outcome of the results, and he leads some kind of revolt against the legitimacy of the election, that's really bad. I don't know if it'll come to that, but it's just amazing to me that he can't figure out which message is going to work and then stick to the message that would work.
Why do you think he took such particular exception to Alec Baldwin rather than the others who had preceded him?
Well, I mean, you'd have to ask the Donald. I mean, the other actors who have portrayed Trump on the show are not necessarily known to have the same sort of strident left-wing political beliefs as Alec Baldwin and been involved in left-wing campaigns and whatever. And so that might have been part of it. But on the other hand, I just think that, you know, Baldwin has zeroed in on the things that he's very touchy about. And it's not about the things that the public would expect him to necessarily be touchy about.
I think he's also a better impersonator.
I was going to say, he's really got a lot of the mannerisms
exactly.
down, too, in a way where maybe it hits a little too close to home to watch.
Well, and if you watch the whole first segment there, I mean, you have Alec Baldwin basically saying that Hillary Clinton needs to be arrested and she's committed so many crimes that she's like a black. I mean, okay, that's really, really offensive, whether you agree with the statement or not. And there are other ways in which, you know, basically Alec Baldwin made him out to be, he likes young people so much he marries them, I think it was one other, you know. So that was pretty, those were pretty heavy digs that I think just about anybody would be upset about, but threatening to file a lawsuit and getting off message again, I don't get that.
Can we spend a little bit more time on the liberal media bias that he and so many others are alleging?
Sure.
Because liberal has become a very, very nasty word. You don't hear conservative used with the same negative undertone.
So how did we get to this point?
I want to know that. Why did we get to this point? How did we? And it seems to me we've been dealing with this for years, for decades even. But it's much, much worse this time. And not only has it gone from the commie leftist liberal media, but now to no longer having any faith in the news media among our various institutions. This one is, and I consider the press an institution, this is one that has come under a very severe attack. And if we lose all confidence in the media, boy, what do we have lost?
I mean, it's kind of interesting to me, Rod, because, I mean, I don't think we'll ever resolve this question to everyone's satisfaction. You could argue there was a time when there were only a few media organizations that tended to have the people who worked in them a little bit left of center, and there weren't other avenues for people who didn't agree with the media's framing to get their message out there. But now there are as many media outlets as you can possibly imagine from every political perspective. And rather than mollifying people, it's just made things more corrosive.
Well, and another part of it, too, that I would add to that is that, again, looking back decades, you're looking at and talking about people like Cronkite. You're looking at people like Brinkley. The story wasn't about them. You look today at all of these different splintered media organizations. You look at the inclusion of social media as part of that. And there's so much pressure on individual journalists to think about their personal brand. Mm-hmm. And the story becomes in so many ways about the journalist, not necessarily that the journalist is part of a larger organization, but that almost everybody is working, even if they do have the big corporate paycheck coming, almost as if everybody is working as their own separate contractor, trying to get their brand out ahead of what that organization is that they're working for. And I think that leads to some of it too, because people then begin to wonder about who they can trust, who they can't, who brings the same personal perspectives to it that they do. And that's where you start to have some of those breakdowns.
I worry, too, that, you know, we have this well-established sort of echo chamber effect now where people only have their ideas reinforced by the media and the people that they associate with on social media. It's led to a situation where you have here's a couple of headlines from a couple of really popular conservative news websites. One is called InfoWars and says satellite feed cut as soon as congressman mentions WikiLeaks on CNN. Here's another headline, Hillary to use shadow government to steal the election. And then over on Breitbart, they have similarly conspiratorial ones. And then they end with, they will even go so far as to attack the Democrats for with a headline like this, Democrats bus dumps human waste in street. I mean, everything is partisan now, every single story. And I don't know how you bring us back from the cliff.
Well, especially when you talk about Donald Trump and the rumors swirling there that his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has been looking at and talking to other investors about starting his own television network at the end of the election cycle. And perhaps we even create a new depth to that echo chamber with perhaps a network that is even more conservative or even more to the right than Fox News.
I don't know that I have any particular comeback to that, but I just thought of something else as a kind of a follow-up to my magnificent, eloquent defense of the media a moment ago. You know, I think to some extent, and this sounds like I just flipped, to some extent, the media have taken more of a position on this campaign than in previous campaigns. Not just the editorial pages, which are, of course, filled with anti-Trump comments and punditry, but even the way the news stories are written. There is a looseness, more of a looseness, in our use of adjectives and other comments or phrasing that plays up the liberal attitude in most newsrooms. And, you know, there is it's pretty well known among journalists that journalists, as a group, do tend to be more liberal-minded. And the old argument in support of that was, that's because they're more for the underdog.
And I think there's some truth to that. What concerns me, though, is the extent to which whatever the media do, and I agree, the media have gone out of their way this time around to say, Trump, you're a liar. You know, I mean, use that word, that he lied on the air, in print, much more than they ever would have. On the other hand, the comeback from the public is also kind of different and scary. I mean, the Arizona Republic was one of many newspapers that have never or rarely endorsed a Democrat. And for the first time ever, they're endorsing Hillary Clinton. And their publisher, their president, felt the need to write a piece the other day defending that against some of the most vicious attacks.
Talk a little bit about what was in that piece.
Well, so first of all, here are some of the attacks that were sent directly to the publisher. You're dead. Watch your back. We'll burn you down. You should be put in front of a firing squad as a traitor. Now, I hate to say it, but there are a lot of people, and especially a lot of prominent women, who have gotten that kind of treatment on the internet for a long, long time. But for people to say that to a news organization just because they endorsed a candidate they disagree with, that's toxic and that's dangerous. And so the publisher goes through and says, well, we're being transparent. Here's some video of our editorial board as we were talking about whether and why to do this. I mean, here's a defense of me personally, because a lot of people said as a Korean American, I'm not Christian or whatever. So they had to go through this long, and they also had to defend why they thought that they took these violent attacks seriously because of Don Bowles, one of their reporters, being killed by a car bomb 40 years ago while working on an investigative story. It's just amazing they had to do that.
So now we have one of those challenges that comes with a multi-platform program, because our radio listeners, well, you're looking at your clock right now and noticing we have about an hour until the debate starts. For our TV and for most of our online audience, the debate is likely over. But I want to ask both of you, Rod and Mike, what are you looking for tonight, and what could potentially be the last time we see these two candidates in the same place at the same time in the same location?
I'm just looking for some more non-substantive rhetoric, vitriol, bad mouthing.
So that's what you're expecting. Is that what you're looking for, too?
Oh, I would look for something a little bit more esoteric than that, but that's what I'm expecting.
Okay.
I would expect there to be a fair number of questions about WikiLeaks, the story that you could argue has been buried into the avalanche of the Trump assault video and everything else. And I would also expect, contrary to some of the critics, that Chris Wallace is going to be very aggressive in his questioning of both of the candidates.
Well, and when we first talked about his being named one of the moderators, and he was saying it isn't his job to fact check, the game has changed a little bit since then.
I still think he believes that ideally his role should be to sit back and let them attack each other, and he just tees up the good questions. But if anybody has ever watched him on Fox News Sunday grilling Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives, libertarians, whatever, he asks very tough questions and very good follow-up questions of everybody of every stripe. The debate situation is not the same as a Sunday morning talk show, but he can't throw up graphics to make his point, for example. I doubt the debate commission is going to let him do that. But I think he's going to go pretty tough on
him. And remember, he has his father's genes.
Yeah. Mike Wallace would, I think, probably be proud of what he's going to try to do tonight. I don't know if the format will allow it, but what he would try to do.
Okay, well, we are just about out of time for today. Before we go, I have a programming note of sorts to share with you. Next week, we're going to have a special edition of Views of the News for you. We're going on the road, and we're doing the show live at the Missouri River Regional Library in Jefferson City. Mike, Ernest, Perry, and I invite you to join us to watch it live from 6:30 to 7, and then we'll take your questions about coverage of the debates, about the media's role in this crazy campaign season, and what to look for in the waning weeks. This event is free and open to the public, and we hope that we will see you there. You can read more about all of the topics we talked about on today's program. You can check out the Links blog under the Programs tab at KBIA.org. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @viewsonKBIA. These are all great ways to watch and to listen to our program again, to leave us comments or questions, see previews of what we will be talking about next week, and more. Our thanks to RJI's Travis McMillan for directing today's show, and to Pat Akers for handling the audio. Megan Sheets is our associate producer. I'm Amy Simons. Be sure to join us again next week when we're back with you for another edition of Views of the News.